My name is Max Satayaji. I am a physician researcher and I oversee the HIV treatment pipeline and global research strategy at Viva Healthcare. I have led the FOSMCBA team in this development program for the better part of 12 years, so this is a very special moment for me. Today, I plan to present the story of FOSMCBA, the story of dedication, and how at the week 240 time point, FOSMCBA is addressing unmet needs for heavily treatment experienced people living with multi drug resistance HIV in an unprecedented fashion. The scientist in the picture is not a model. His name is John Cato, a co-inventor of FOSMCBA. And we work together at our Center of Excellence for Drug Discovery and Development in Brentford, Connecticut. FOSMCBA extended release tablet is a first-in-class HIV-1 attachment inhibitor with a unique MOA. It is also the first antiretroviral to prevent HIV-1 attachment to CD4 T cells, protecting CD4 T cells and other immune cells. It is also the first antiretroviral approved agent for treating people living with multi-drug resistant HIV-1 for whom no suppressive ART regimen can be constructed. Let's talk about the mechanism of action. What you can see on the cell here, on this slide, is a surface of the CD4 T cells in gray with CD4 receptors and co-receptors. In green, you can see approaching the CD4 T cell is a viral cell surface with GP120 trimers in yellow and GP41 in red. And on GP120, you can see the CD4 binding sites. When FOSMCBA is in the plasma, the active moiety of FOSMCBA, FOSMCBA binds to GP120 near the CD4 binding site, preventing a conformational change that is needed for HIV to attach to our CD4, therefore preventing attachment of HIV to our CD4 T cells and other immune cells. I mean, for the first time here with FOSMCBA, we are attacking the virus without waiting for the virus to attack us. What happens to all about those viral particles? They accumulate in the extracellular space and viruses are subsequently removed by the host immune system. We talk quite often about heavily treatment experienced people living with multi-drug resistance HIV. Who are those people living with HIV? People living with multi-drug resistance HIV have significant unmet needs and pose major clinical challenges. First of all, they are long-term survivors, they are ART toxicity, they are poor adherence, drug-drug interactions, they are on complex regimen, and also they carry drug resistance HIV. In terms of unmet need, they have exhausted their ART options, they have high resource utilization and high mortality. They carry high burden of disease. For example, life expectancy for these patients are further reduced by a low CD4 count nadir. You have a 20-year reduction in life expectancy with CD4 count nadir less than 350. And of the 20 million people on ART globally, the vast majority started with ART at CD4 T cell count less than 350. In terms of mortality, mortality is higher in those with poor CD4 count recovery, even during antiretroviral treatment. What you can see here with those CD4 count less than 200, you have a 10-year mortality rate of 25%, and the majority of non-AIDS causes of death also happen at a CD4 count less than 200. Fortunately, FOSMCBA has the required drug attribute to help heavily treatment experienced people with multi-drug resistance HIV. It has a novel class, a new MOA, no cross resistance to existing ART, and the ability to increase or maintain CD4 T cell count. FOSMCBA has a good safety and tolerability profile and a favorable drug-drug interaction profile. All of those attributes help heavily treatment experienced people living with multi-drug resistance HIV. Let's take a look now at the clinical development journey for FOSMCBA, a story 2 decades in the making. The clinical development program started in year 2000 with one viable candidate, even though thousands of samples were tested. In 2004, we created a poor drug to overcome FOSMCBA solubility rate-limited absorption. And FOSMCBA is converted to its active moiety, FOSMCBA, in the intestinal lumen by alkaline phosphatase. In 2006, we created an extended release formulation to lower Cmax and therefore improve tolerability and safety to prolong absorption and extend half-life, which gave us options at once-a-day doses for FOSMCBA. In 2015, we were the first team to use the 2015 guidance from the FDA to study a drug in heavily treatment-experienced participants. The study called the BRIGHT study had two cohorts, the randomized cohort, where participants failing their regimen still had 1 to 2 ARVs remaining. Those were randomized 3 to 1 to receive fostemsavir or placebo for 8 days. And then number 9, they were put on open label for fostemsavir plus optimized background therapy. The non-randomized cohort, these heavily treatment participants, they're failing their regimen, but they had no options remaining. Those patients or those participants were started on fostemsavir right away plus optimized background therapy. In 2016, due to the divestment of the HIV franchise from Bristol Myers Squibb to Viv Healthcare, fostemsavir and its development program moved from Bristol Myers Squibb to Viv Healthcare. And almost the entire team moved with fostemsavir because they wanted to finish the job. That shows tremendous dedication. In 2017, we had the primary endpoint data with fostemsavir, and the primary endpoint was met by fostemsavir, showing superiority to placebo at the number 8, with a median decrease in of 1 log at the 8, and also with safety and tolerability meeting primary endpoint at week 24. Between 2017 and 2019, we had to build not one, but 2 manufacturing facilities to make fostemsavir due to a photodegradate that was found in the manufacturing process. But that shows tremendous dedication from Viv and consistent with our approach of leaving no person living with HIV behind. That led to a US FDA approval in 2020 and an EU EMA approval in 2021. In 2022, at the International AIDS Conference, the BRIGHT study results at week 240 were presented. Baseline characteristics. It's always amazing to me to see the baseline characteristics for the BRIGHT study. 75% of participants had a CD4 count of less than 200 at baseline, and 86% on history of AIDS. Let's take a look now at antiviral efficacy and CD4 T-cell count recovery. Here you can see in red the efficacy results for the randomized cohort. In solid line, you can see the ITT analysis or intention to treat analysis. I always start with 196, week 96, because that's the first time in heavily treatment experience participants we saw an increase in efficacy between week 48 and 96. We think that this is due to the mechanism of action of the drug. Between 196 to week 192, the efficacy results stayed fairly similar, but after week 192, what we saw is a reduced virologic response rates by snapshot analysis. And those were partially confounded by missing data due to COVID-19 at week 240. 19 participants in the randomized cohort and 5 in the non-randomized cohort were counted as virologic failure for these reasons. However, when you look at the observed data, the dashed line, that's why we look at observed data in heavily treatment experienced studies. You could see that the efficacy remained fairly consistent and was still increasing at week 240. And the reason why is that if you stay on fostemsavir and your background therapy, and you keep taking the medications, even in that population, it shows that observed data is quite significant at week 240. In the non-randomized cohort, we saw a similar pattern affecting the ITT analysis, but similar rates of response by observed data in the dashed line in black from week 96 to week 240. CD4 count recovery. In the randomized cohort, you can see that a change from baseline in CD4 count of 296 CD4 cells at week 240. This is very significant. In black, you can see even in a non-randomized cohort where only fostemsavir was susceptible or active, a change in CD4 T cell count from baseline of 240 cells. That is life-saving for these patients. This slide is fairly significant, and what it shows is that usually when a patient is not suppressed, you see a decrease in CD4 T cell count. However, what we're seeing here at week 240 in the blue line, where patients are suppressed, the CD4 T cell count change from baseline of 312 CD4s. Even in those patients, the dotted line, that were not completely suppressed, we saw a CD4 T-cell count change of 251 CD4s in the randomized cohort. That's fairly significant in that patient population. In those patients who needed it the most, and that's why I really like this slide, because first we're showing you CD4 T-cell count recovery in the 50 to 100 range, 100 to 200 range, and greater than 200 CD4 at baseline, you can see a fairly significant increase in CD4s. But in those patients that needed it the most, those patients in the 20 to 50 range, or those patients with the CD4 count at baseline of less than 20, we saw a CD4 T-cell count change from baseline of 338 CD4. This is astonishing here and life-saving for these patients. In addition, you remember I told you at less than 200 CD4 T-cell count, you have a increased mortality rate of 25%. 78% of participants with CD4 T-cell count less than 200 went above 200 in the randomized cohort at week 240. Next, we look at the mean CD4-CD8 ratio. And that's important because when we talk to our colleagues in the field, they always tell us that we need a better measure of immune function. And one of the better measures of immune function is the mean CD4-CD8 ratio. And what we saw in bright is that the mean CD4-CD8 ratio went from 0.2 to 0.6. And the reason why this is important for the entire cohort is that a CD4-CD8 ratio less than 0.45 is usually associated with 3 to 5-fold increase in morbidity and mortality. So you can see that in that randomized cohort, their morbidity and mortality decreased by 3 to 5-fold. In the non-randomized cohort, if you remember again, where only for SEMCD was active, they went from a less than 0.2 CD4-CD8 ratio to 0.32 and still increasing at week 240. So really, in the randomized cohort, they move from the red category through the yellow now in the green category, which means a significant immune system recovery for these patients. In terms of safety to week 240, the safety profile was consistent with earlier findings across both cohorts. And if you look at the drug-related SAEs, they remain low throughout the study up to week 240. Last but not least, I will talk about a personal case, a patient that I actually knew when I was doing my fellowship at Yale in HIV and infectious disease. This is a patient that is a 61-year-old African-American female living with AIDS and multi-drug resistance HIV. The first time I met with the patient, that was in 2004, and the patient was in and out of treatment, non-compliant. We would lose follow up with these patients for a couple of years. And so by the time we were in 2015 and we were starting the BRIGHT study, the patient was in a hospital with a CD4 count of 2, full-blown AIDS, and was going to die within a couple of weeks. We were able to actually put her in the BRIGHT study, and she still had fostemsavir and dolutegravir as the only susceptible antiretroviral agents. The rest of the background therapy was really made of drugs that might be partially susceptible. What we saw in this patient was an incredible recovery. First, the viral load decay was quick, and the patient remained undetectable up to week 204 that we're seeing here. So from week 4 to 204, about 200 weeks, the patient has been completely undetectable. And what we saw, what was remarkable, was the increase in CD4 from a CD4 count of 2 all the way to 745. But more importantly, I just discussed with you the CD4-CD8 ratio and its importance in terms of immune recovery. We moved from 0.005 all the way to 0.824, almost reaching a normal range in the CD4-CD8 ratio. So we'll continue to monitor this patient, but what you can see here is a total turnaround in this patient control of HIV and immune system. Also, I mean, from a social perspective, the patients I saw a year ago, she's back to having friends, playing cards, going out, and really has turned her life around. This case makes me feel both, powerful and humble at the same time. You know, this is certainly a powerful case. Last but not least, for this specific patient, you can see her progression of the CD4-CD8 ratio, where she started at zero, 0.005, all the way to a CD4-CD8 ratio of 0.824. So a progression from red to yellow to green. That is simply astonishing. So I would like to thank you for your attention. I would like to thank the patients and the participants that are participated in the BRIGHT trial, and also the investigators that have helped us collect data all the way to week 240, which is usually rare in a heavily treatment experience trial. Thank you very much.